Mark Tognazzini, as you know, I was just over in Honolulu at the fish auction, and my eyes were opened, and yet I'm still curious and naive about intricacies what constitute fresh fish, like tuna that comes in here. You know, where does it come from?
Sure. Well, a lot of our tuna depends on the time of the year, but in our off-season, when we don't have temperate water conditions offshore here, we have to go elsewhere for our tuna.
So the tuna and the pelagic fish that we get here, where does it come from?
Well, during what we consider the pelagic season here, when we have temperate offshore waters, from about mid-August to sometimes as late as mid-January, the majority of tuna comes from, in this state, from offshore gill netters. There's about 20, 25 guys in the state of California that are legally licensed to fish offshore. They fish a 1 mile long pelagic gill net, and they catch a multitude of their target species actually is swordfish, but they catch opah, they catch your yellowfin, they catch some bluefin, they catch your big eye.
And this is not right off the coast. Some of these guys are going over 1,000 miles out in the Pacific.
In the off season, from what I would say mid-January to till about August, some of the boats that we buy from are actually longliners that are by law have to go at least 200 miles. And they can go as far as 500,000, 600,000, 800,000 miles offshore, and they actually fish a long line. And that's, and we source those fish out of Ventura from a boat called the Ventura 2, and that's what they do. Their specialty, in our off season, when the fish are not as near shore, then they long line way offshore, and that's how we access that fish.
And a clarification for a non-commercial fisherman, long line means it is literally a long line with multiple hooks on it on one line, right?
Absolutely. I'm not sure the exact mileage they're fishing, but I would imagine they're fishing a long line in the mileage of maybe 30 or 35 miles with hundreds of hooks set on it. And that's basically in the off-season. The fish during what we consider the on-season are much more nearshore. They can be, we can have swordfish as close as 60 miles pretty easily. And not this last year, but the year before, we had a pretty banner season here.
For the guys that are fishing 1,000 miles out or more, it might be a few days before the catch is brought to shore and even cleaned.
Yeah, the fish that come up a long line that are still alive, some are dead. They're all cleaned right away, but they're a lot, if they come up live, they are bled and cleaned, and they go on ice. And yes, the travel time can be anywhere from 3 days to maybe even as many as 6 or 7 days to the grounds. And so you're looking at a fresh product, truly fresh, that could be as easily as 2 weeks old.
Are they brine dipped? Are they refrigerated? Or are they iced?
They're iced.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. They ice. Most of them have their own ice makers on board, and they ice them, and they'll re-ice them during a trip also. Depends on when they catch them, because ice, you know, we think of ice as being 32 degrees, but ice can be 0 degrees. And so during a trip, when they ice them initially, they'll actually, maybe a week into it, if a little longer than that, they'll go ahead and re-ice, because they'll be using ice that is not starting to melt at, say, 32 or 33 degrees, but they'll be using 0 degree ice.
But again, like you said, they've been cleaned, the blood sac is gone and whatnot, so you're not getting the bleed into the meat.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, fish has great shelf life if it's taken care of by the person who caught it. And we don't think, everybody wants to think about day fish or caught just yesterday or caught just this morning. Well, number one, I don't think you want to eat a fish that was caught today. I think you need to let it sit and go through rigor properly, at least overnight, if not a couple of nights. I think number one.
And
number
saying it better. It's a premium.
They actually get better. They really do. People don't want to hear that. And here's what they really don't want to hear, is that many fish, if it's taken care of by the fisher, and that's really important to throw that caveat in there. If it's taken care of by the fisher, has weeks of shelf life. If you think about swordfish longliners, that they take the head off and the gut out, and just the carcass, 3 weeks, and they'll deliver a truly fresh product, believe it or not. White sea bass, up to 14 days. And this is in the round. The one thing, once you break a fish into fillets or steaks or loins, then you open it to oxidization. And once you do that, then it does change the whole thing. So in the round, fish have tremendously, especially a gutted and gilled or de-headed fish, has tremendous shelf life.
Oh, interesting. So for the consumer going, say you have fresh fish here at this market, and you have the clear glass display cases, and there's the fish. What do you look for? You know, what are the signs of a truly fresh fish, say a tuna?
A tuna, I think you want, I don't think you want brown reds. I think that's the big key in all fish. You want your reds to be medium color to bright red.
There's a translucency that's...
Yeah, a little bit of translucency in the white flesh or in the clear flesh. With exception, swordfish doesn't have that. It's more of a milky colored flesh. But I think that's what you look for. I think you look for the bright reds in the red that's in the fish and not the brown reds. And the browner the red, for example, if you look at a swordfish, they'll have a little red in there. You want the brighter the red, the fresher. The browner the red, the less fresh. With one exception, you can take 2-day-old swordfish, freeze it, and that extremely bright red becomes brown. So,
even though it hasn't oxidized.
Exactly, yeah. So there's a couple little tricks that way. But the key is, find a seafood vendor that you trust. Ask them questions. I think we're better consumers and better educated than we have ever been about consuming, whether it's fish or beef or vegetables. I think we really pay attention more than we ever have. And ask hard questions. The one thing I tell people in my business, if it doesn't make sense, if it smells kind of fishy, it probably is fishy.
One interesting, I used to think that a lean fish was better than a fatty fish. And yeah, especially for barbecuing, I've learned that that's not true.
Especially if you're going to go straight to the hot grill or right on the grating itself, yeah. I think the fattier the fish, the better. I think it's better for you as far as omega-3 and things like that. And as a society, we're starting to do that. A long time ago, it used to be for most consumers in the United States, it was white, firm, boneless, tasteless.
One other thing that I find fascinating, you read the literature about the fisheries around the world, Asia and whatnot, and there are no controls. It's wide open and you don't know what you're getting. Whereas in the case with NOAA and the American Fisheries Associations, there is oversight.
Yeah, there is. They talk about sustainability, and those of us in the business almost don't like to use the word because there's really no guidelines for it, number one. And number two, it states that maybe we weren't doing something sustainable 50 or 60 years ago. Well, science does change. The problem becomes is when we import fish from other nations that aren't held to the same moral standard, yet we don't tax or tariff that product. So it becomes a very unlevel playing field, and it really handicaps the American food producer. If you want to eat fresh salmon, truly fresh salmon, after about the latter part of September and prior to April, in other words, the winter months, you're going to eat farm fish. And you got to be willing to accept that, or you eat seasonally. And I think that's it. That's what people have to look at. If you want a tomato in December, you're going to have to get it from another nation. And so we have to make those decisions on what we consume. And sometimes those are hard decisions. But I think the end results is that you protect the American food producer, which is probably pretty important. For an example, if you like salmon and you go to a place and they have wild salmon, they really should tell you the species. Five different species, caught in a multitude of ways. And if they can't tell you the species, it's the same analogy would be going to a steakhouse and just getting a steak, where you would never do that. You would get a ribeye or a porterhouse or New York. When you go eat salmon, they should be able to tell you that one of the five different species. If they just say it's salmon, that's a little too generic for me. I think I'd buy salmon someplace else.
In addition to you owning and operating three seafood restaurants and cafes and whatnot on the Morro Bay waterfront, you're also a commercial fisherman yourself, so you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I really am. That's really where we got our start. We have expanded operations over the last 10, 12 years here, but this is my 47th season as a commercial fisherman. I troll mostly salmon and albacore, although I've fished a multitude of things in my career, but that's where my real heart is on the ocean. This other part of our life is a nice diversion, and it has been nice to link fishermen with a consumer and have people realize there's a lot of great fishermen in this nation, let alone in the state and locally here, that can produce great fish for them.
Mark Tognazzini, thanks again so much for visiting, and what a great day on the bay. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting for Issues and Ideas from the Harborfront in Morro Bay, California. Directly across from the container port in the heart of Honolulu Harbor, there's a large utilitarian metal building that's adjacent to the docks at Pier 38, where the tuna boats tie up. It's 5 a.m. right now, and we're waiting outside for the 5:30 bell that announces the commencement of United Fishing Agency's daily wholesale auction. It's the only one of its kind between Tokyo and the east coast of the United States. Buyers from fish markets, restaurants, and distributors arrive in their oversized pickups. They chew the fat out in the parking lot and then start to amble in. They're clad in bulky jackets, parkas, and hooded sweatshirts, which seems a bit strange at first, since it's a balmy 71 degrees outside and the sun hasn't even risen yet. But the disconnect is quickly solved when it's our turn to head inside, where it's as cold as a winter day in Anchorage. While we wait for the bell to ring, we dodge frenetic forklifts, shuttling iced crates bulging with freshly unloaded big-eye tuna, swordfish, opa, marlin, albacore, and more. Dr. John Kaneko, program manager with the nonprofit Hawaii Seafood Organization, steps up and introduces himself and invites us inside for a tour and to watch the auction up close and personal.
This is where the fishermen are able to drop off their fish here at the auction. Every fish will be displayed in its best condition in the right order for these buyers, and then the buyers are going to go through and bid competitively on each individual fish based on its quality merits. This market is extremely sensitive to the local supply because we have a major fleet of boats here. Our longline fleet produces about 85 to 87% of all of the commercial fish that is landed in Hawaii, and also the commercial value. This particular fishery is managed under NOAA, the fishery service, and it's a science-based management system with all of the public process and the science to back it up with enforcement and everything else. Just this morning, you know, we see another group over here. So these guys, the folks over here, this is a vice admiral, is one of the high-level guys at NOAA. So his group's down here. We've got the director of the Science Center from NOAA, Pacific Island Science Center, who's giving the orientation to the NOAA people about what the NOAA guys do here. So when I talk about sustainability in a Hawaii fish, I'm really talking about how this fishery is managed. It's about how the management system operates and what we're all paying for as taxpayers. So American fishery products managed under NOAA Fisheries, you can buy with confidence. Imports, you're basically, you have to do some homework to figure out what you're going to support with your money. Where is this fishery right now? Somewhere around $100 million. It's driving our restaurant industry plus all the other value added. For Hawaii in fishery production right now, we're somewhere around 38% of the seafood that's consumed in Hawaii is produced locally. But across the country, of the total U.S. seafood supply, and we're huge consumers of seafood collectively, individually not very much, we're somewhere around 6% is caught by Americans and processed and landed in the United States. 6% of the total amount of seafood. Okay, so I wanted to show you some of the historic things about this fleet. We're going to talk about the longline fleet, why it is such a well-managed fishery. Longliners are characterized by the fishing method and the gear that they carry. And so any of these boats, like this is actually one of the original wooden sandbands built by some of the old Japanese boat builders. This is pre-war, and I'm not talking about Iraq. I'm talking about World War II. And a longlining, by the way, started in Hawaii in 1917. But this boat still has to comply with all the regulations. So our regulations that keep this fleet well-managed and sustainable and defendable is that these are managed by the federal government because they are fishing outside of state waters. Specials of the day are based on the landings here. So right now we've got, what, prices are pretty good, right? But prices for the very high-end sashimi-grade tunas, you know, got all the bells and whistles, 150 pounds plus, got fat, red-colored, translucent, all, got all the bells and whistles. Those are rare animals. So the prices of that fish is still up. There's just not that much of it. Once you start dropping into the qualities where we're competing with commodities coming from Indonesia, Philippines, Taiwan, and then you go to the East Coast through Houston and through Miami, you're talking about unloading Ecuador, Grenada, all these other places that are fishing for the fresh market. These are the big eye tuna. If I go down this way, we can walk this way and see all the different species. And what they're doing now is they set it out, and then as they sell it, the auction is going to run up and down the rows, just like a zipper. So he's counting out a price per pound. So once you come in, let's say I start out with a fish like this, I want to get $7 or $6 for it. I start at $7, so it's $6.90, $6.80, $6.70, blah, blah, blah. Come right down to $5.50. If you come in at $5.50, and we might just bid it right back up. So the tail cuts back here, really where you're going to find out all the information on the fish. So when you grade tuna, looking for the qualities, when you look at the meat, they're looking for color, clarity, texture, and fat. So color is going to range from a true red to a brown, everything in between. Then it's going to go from very clear to opaque, cannot see through it. As it starts to go downhill, quality-wise, it's going to go from firm to soft. Those are all impacted by temperature and how long it's been on ice. The last thing would be fat.
then the big practical question is, would you eat this fish or not? How would you eat it is the next question. Would you eat that raw? I would eat that raw. Would I eat that as poke? Absolutely, I'd eat that as poke. Would I eat that as sashimi? I would eat that at my house as sashimi. We're only looking at the fat content now, but this one's actually got some oil in it. So there's fat there, fat there, fat there. And so fat fish are revered for the flavor.
20 out of 100, 28 for the day.
Okay, so they're just about to come up to the swordfish. So there's a single swordfish right there, you see it? Okay, now he's at the swordfish.
And these buyers, who are they?
The buyers are primarily wholesalers. So they're wholesalers, they'll buy this fish, process it, ship it out, or just put it in a box and ship it. The swordfish just went for $4.60 a pound. So $4.60 a pound, filet yields off of that's probably about 65%. Actually a pretty good deal. That same fish goes to Monterey, it's $22 retail. Big eye's gonna turn soft before it goes brown. So if you're eating yellowfin, it's not from here, we don't catch that from here. Although they're all selling you yellowfin ahi from Hawaii. So here you go. So even at a 50% yield, the fillet cost out here is over $40. We have two different species of tunas. So that was a big eye. The other species of tunas would have been skipjack or aku, and the other one would be tumbo or the albacore. See how nice and clear it is and how red that red line is? It's high quality. It's got good firmness, good clarity. We're going to eat that one raw. And that's a striped marlin now with oil. That will be a problem. That would go, it looks like it might be a little bit soft for poke. You look at the skin colors, you look at eyes, you look at all that. But when we look at the muscle, pretty much cat's out of the bag. Right now we can look to see what the fillet is going to look like. To see how much, how the appearance of this fish, how the blood is kind of bled out into the meat. This one is still clear, very distinct. Outward appearance between those two fish, I wouldn't know the difference. But once I cut open the tail, I can tell.
You've been listening to Dr. John Kaneko, Program Manager with the nonprofit Hawaii Seafood Organization. Dr. Kaneko said if you're interested in signing up for a 90-minute educational tour like the one we took, it requires pre-registration on their website at hawaiiseafood.org. Dr. Kaneko said they created the tour to offer visitors a first-hand exposure to Hawaii's commercial fishery and seafood industry and gain new perspectives on what it takes to catch the fish and to study, monitor, and manage the fishery for sustainability. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Honolulu Harbor, Hawaii.